now, your hosts for Life from the Pulpits. Here's Nick Perez.
Yes, and how's it? You can't stop it, you can only hope to contain it. I'm talking about the fastest half-hour podcast in the West. This is Life from the Pulpit, coming to you live and local from deep in the heart of the San Joaquin Valley, deep in the heart of Merced Church of Christ. I am your guide on this excursion in theology, Nick Perez, the voice of the valley, offering up news and views you can use on Scripture and society with a little help from my friends. Greetings and welcome to the program. Now, I want to touch something here that is highly controversial. And when you hear it, you're not going to believe it. But nevertheless, I press forward, because if I don't say it, who's going to say it? I want you to think back to when you first heard about the possibility of legalizing homosexual marriage. What was your reaction? And I know I'm speaking to an audience here which is probably pretty fluent with what Scripture has to say about homosexuality. It is against it. It is an abomination in the Old Testament. It is a perversion in the New Testament. Everywhere you look in the Bible, it is categorically condemned. But besides your biblical response, what was your reaction to hearing of the possibility of legalizing homosexual marriage here in the United States of America? No way! That'll never happen. Not in this country. Right? Yet here we are, with 9 states of the Union which have legalized what is called same-sex marriage, homosexual marriage. Here we are with just 2 short months away, and even less time now probably, but 2 short months away from the United States Supreme Court hearing cases concerning the legality of homosexual marriages, even in my own state right now, state of California. More and more people are viewing homosexuality and homosexual marriage as just another alternate lifestyle. And while it has been a long battle, the mainstream media and arguing academicians have seemingly won the debate of whether homosexuality is an acceptable sexual orientation. I'm not talking about in the church. I'm not talking about biblically literate folks. I'm talking about on the whole, in this culture. Someone talks about, you know, a homosexual relationship, they'll say, no, not that anything's bad with that, right? That's what you see in this culture. Now, I want you to consider that a simmering pot has been moved from the back burner to the front burner, where the heat is turned up. A guy by the name of John Henley from the UK-based news organization The Guardian, very left-leaning liberal publication. John Henley published an article, Erlitophilia, I guess is how they pronounce it over there because they spell it with a bringing dark desires into the light. It begins, in 1976, the National Council of Civil Liberties, the respectable and responsible pressure group known as Liberty, made a submission to Parliament's Criminal Law Revision Committee. It caused barely a ripple. Childhood sexual experiences willingly engaged in with an adult, it read, result in no identifiable damage. The real need is a change in the attitude, which assumes that all cases of pedophilia result in lasting damage. This article talks about a liberal professor of psychology who studied in the late 1970s. You'll see things very differently from someone working in child protection or with convicted sex offenders. He says that because of so many academicians, those in academia, for those of you having trouble with the language, guys with the patches sewn onto their elbows of their sport coats, okay? The intelligentsia, the smart ones, the wizards of smart. They're the academicians. They will look at pedophilia differently than a person working in child protective services, someone who's working with convicted sex offenders, stuff like that. This Henley, he says that a pedophile is someone who has a primary or exclusive sexual interest in prepubescent children. But, he says, not all pedophiles are child molesters, and vice versa. By no means every pedophile acts on his impulses, and many people who sexually abuse children are not exclusively or primarily sexually attracted to them. In fact, quote, true, end quote, pedophiles are estimated by some experts to account for only 20% of sexual abusers. This is an extensive article, quite the piece of work. I'll summarize it as best I can. What it seems that Henley is proposing in this article, pedophiles, they need to express that deep, dark desire in healthy relationships and safe relationships. That is to say that for the child, this needs to be, they need to be in a situation where an adult, pedophile, can engage in sex with them, and it needs to be safe, and it needs to be an understanding relationship, because of course kids, they know what they're doing, right? They can figure this stuff out. They're always making good decisions that don't always lead to healthy results in their particular being, right? A guy by the name of Wesley Smith from the National Review Online, he picked up on this. And he quotes from this article, pedophiles may be wired differently. This is radical stuff, but there is a growing conviction, notably in Canada, that pedophilia should probably be classified as a distinct sexual orientation, like heterosexuality or homosexuality. Did you catch that? Pedophilia is just another healthy, so long as it's in the right context and relationship, just another healthy sexual orientation. Two eminent researchers testified that to that effect to a Canadian Parliament Commission, and the Harvard Medical Health letter of July 2010 stated baldly that pedophilia is a sexual orientation, therefore unlikely to change. I'm going to come back to Smith's article in just a moment. Henley presents the underwhelming amount of research in the field of pedophilia. So there's just not a lot written about it. But the most shocking part of the article is in terms of the fact that several academicians, those at the university level, argue in favor of pedophilia as an acceptable sexual orientation. Does this sound any kind of familiar? Listen, the reason deviant sexual behavior, like homosexual marriage, is legalized is because it is first normalized in the public's mind. Wesley Smith calls that terminal non-judgmentalism. I quote, think about it. If the desire for sexual congress with children is just another orientation, quote, another orientation, an odious comparison in my view, and if some children supposedly like it when they voluntarily engage in sex with adults, and indeed, if it doesn't actually hurt them, how long would the absolute rejection of cross-generation congress last? Not very. It wouldn't be long until we saw the absolute prohibition of pedophiliac sex pedophilic sex downgraded to a mere taboo, which, as the last 50 years teach us, are made to be broken. NAMBLA members must be grinning ear to ear. Terminal non-judgmentalism is designed to move us from viewing pedophilia as absolutely unacceptable to an issue that is debatable and should be discussed toward the final goal of acceptability. While it is a slow-moving train, it is moving nevertheless. Scriptures warned us about this. 2 Timothy 3:13, evil people go on from bad to worse, deceiving and being deceived. I'd like to think that it's getting better, but it doesn't appear to be. There is a connection between the pedophile movement and the homosexual agenda, though advocates from both of those probably wouldn't want the connection made. And they come from a variety of backgrounds. The rationale, let's examine some of the rationale, or at least irrationale, in my opinion, behind the normalization of these kinds of sinful activities. Proponents of deviant sexual behavior will use statements and phrases like, if two people are committed to a loving relationship, who are we to stand in their way and tell them that it's wrong? So goes the specious reasoning. Love is love. That's what the proponents of stuff like this will advocate. Listen, if love is love, and someone's love finds expression in a loving, or maybe that should be stated, sexual relationship with, say, a cat or some other animal, well, who are we to say if that's right or wrong, right? We live in a culture that says, kill the babies, but save the whales. What if somebody wanted to have sex with a whale? They're just finding an expression of a loving relationship that they have. And love is love, after all, right? Whether that love is shared between a man and his wife, or it's shared between a man and his dolphin. Or what if the loving relationship someone is committed to, what if that involves a small child? I mean, who are we to say that's wrong, right? That's how morality is sacrificed to the idol of love, due to the irrationality of a debased mind. Again, Scripture's warned us about this. Romans 1:28, since they did not think it worthwhile to retain the knowledge of God, he gave them over to a depraved mind to do what ought not to be done. This is exactly how sin is normalized. Sin, any kind of sin, but specifically in this case, homosexual behavior, pedophilia. Unacceptable behavior is shoved into the realm of discussion and debate. That's what Smith talked about, right? You shove it in, you discuss, maybe, several reasons are given. Deficient reasons, but reasons nevertheless, as to why this kind of behavior should be engaged in. Things like how it's all about the quality of relationship. Things like how it's just another acceptable sexual orientation. How we're all sexual beings from birth. They'll talk in terms of a continuum of morality, rather than there being exclusive right and wrong, objective right and wrong. They'll change the terminology. It's no longer pedophilia we're talking about. We're talking about intergenerational sex. They did that with homosexual marriage. You know that, don't you? That's why they call it same-sex marriage. Quasi-research is presented, demonstrating that there's no adverse or harmful consequences to engaging in this kind of immoral behavior, so long as it's in a qualitatively beneficial, mutual, healthful relationship. In fact, Those who engage in this behavior, they can't help themselves because they were born this way, after all. Mind you, the whole time this debate is raging, the opposition is raising objections to the reasons, to the research, even presenting evidence to the contrary. But when they do, they're dismissed as prudes, squares, ignoramuses, superstitious quacks, kooks, nuts, bigots, and quite possibly Bible thumpers. They just need to get hip with the times because they're living in the dark ages. Again, so long the argument, and I got a clip here that I want to share with you. The voice you're going to hear is Barbara Kay. She's a columnist for a newspaper somewhere. I can't remember at the time. But this whole argument about, you know, as long as children, you know, as long as that's a qualitatively healthy relationship, and as long as children are giving consent to it, you know, as long as they want to do that, engage in intergenerational sex, engage in sex with an adult, and then it's okay. They should do that. Before I play the clip, I want to share with you an incident that happened to me once. I once went with a fellow who was he's a recovering alcoholic, and he was going to his meetings as he ought. And one day it was open so that I was able to go to him with his meeting. And I'm sitting there around this table with people, and you know, the addicts have brought people close to them, mostly family members. And there was one fellow, I won't mention his name, but you probably don't know him anyway. He was recovering. He had done, I believe it was PCP, dropped acid, stuff like that. Stuff that eats at your brain. Eats holes in your brain. So he's in there and he's talking about the social worker who's leading this is talking about how she doesn't want her child to watch R-rated movies and how she might have allowed that before she came clean. But now afterward, it's different. The dynamic changes because the primary abuser, their life is turned upside down. So all the codependents around them are turned upside down. And so that's why her daughter doesn't watch R-rated movies, even though she'll say, "But Mom, I used to," and she'll say, "No, it's different now." And this guy just went off on this poor social worker. I felt bad for her. But he was talking about, when I have kids, if they're smart enough to think it, then they're smart enough, they're going to figure out a way to do it, even if you tell them not to. And so what I'm going to do, in his mind, his now Swiss cheese brain, he said that I'm going to make sure that they're going to engage in this particular behavior in a way that's responsible. He was specifically talking about drinking alcohol or even using drugs. Even if my child is four and she thinks or he thinks of doing this, I'm going to be right there. I'm going to let them do it. They should be able to do it. Blah, blah. And for one, I thought, number one, how many kids you have again? None? Okay, so you know absolutely nothing of what you're talking about. Second, he was trying to get all philosophical on this and talk about tradition, which is law. Laws are traditions which have been imposed upon us by the man or something. I don't. It was paranoid delusionalism, characteristic of addicts and stuff like that. But I just thought you have no business engaging in having any kind of children. Because you don't know what you're talking about. Children will give consent to harmful practices, not even knowing that it's harmful. Even, you know, if you say, "Here, drink this poison, I'll give you candy," what do you think the child's going to do? They don't know any different. Developmentally. Anyway, here's this clip. This is Barbara Kay, columnist for, again, I can't remember the newspaper. But anyway, she's in this interview with a guy by the name of Michael Corrin in his television program. Here we go. This is what she had to say about pedophilia.
And this whole idea that children can give consent to being seduced is so really terrible. And I find that when newspapers start listening to academics, they get a sort of a glazed over, you know, the idea that somebody is an expert or that they have a PhD suddenly confers on them some kind of moral authority. But we know, Michael, that some of the worst ideas in history have come straight out of the academy. And in fact, most of the worst ideas in history, Nationalist Socialism and Communism and all kinds of other dreadful ideas come straight out of the university. So that's the last place I would look for a moral authority.
Yes, exactly.
Bravo. Bravo, Barbara Kay. Couldn't have said it better. That's where this garbage is coming from the academicians, from the universities, from the intelligentsia, the wizards of smart. These are the ones who figured it out. And as she said, the worst ideas in history have come from the halls of academia. Case in point, I'm probably going to get in trouble for this one, but I'll say it anyway. All the junk that's going on over in Washington right now. I think I'm safe with that statement. I didn't name names. I didn't name any parties. But for crying out loud, folks. God once said to the prophet Hosea, centuries ago, they sow the wind and they shall reap the whirlwind. In other words, every action has consequences. Sometimes those consequences are larger than the action which caused them. The whirlwind, larger than just a breeze, a wind. It seems the common consequence of normalizing sinful behavior is to legalize that particular behavior. They seemingly normalized homosexual behavior, and so they legalized homosexual marriage. What are the consequences of stuff like that? I found an article in the Christian Post, and I don't have it with me now, but in short, a Catholic bishop over in Ireland, Hugh Gilbert, he has been on record saying that homosexual marriage will lead to bigamy. Jay Bujaszewski, in his book, The Revenge of Conscience, I believe in that book, he drives the nail even further. Legalization of homosexual marriage will lead to pederasty, that's men with boys, NAMBLA, and full-blown pedophilia. Ultimately, legalization of pedophilia is where we are heading in America. Legalization of polygamy and or incest is just going to clean up a step or two that we missed in our decline into moral depravity. Not possible, you say. Remember that once the argument, at one time, the argument was concerning the legalization of homosexual marriage. Where are we in that debate? The sacred, divinely ordained institute of marriage has been sacrificed on the altar to the idol of so-called love in our culture. It's no longer an institution for merely a man and a woman, but now in 9 states it includes the anathema of homosexual relationships. How far away is America from the normalization of pedophilia? I want you to consider that question with this context. Every day in America, we have another 9/11, September 11th, because I say that because 3,000 precious, innocent babies are murdered through abortion. 50 million Americans have been systematically murdered over the last 40 years since Roe versus Wade legalized abortion. Did you catch that? We live in a country which legalized the slaughter of babies in utero. The systematic desacralization and devaluation of human life began decades ago. The train moves further down the track. How far away are we? If we can so desacralize and devalue human life so that the murder of innocent babies in the womb is legalized, we're already well down the pathway. Well, what do we do? What do we do? What can we as Christians do? And this is further, deeper than some kind of political activism. Get involved in government, vote, stuff like that. I submit to you that it begins, first of all, with us. We need to stop normalizing sin in our own lives. You know, sin is trivialized by many Christians. And our language betrays this reality. Sin is merely a bad habit. It's a character defect. You know, cussing, just a bad habit. When I fly off the handle and let anger and rage and malice get the best of me, that's just a character defect. It is anything except sin. What Scripture condemns as absolutely unacceptable, we push into the realm of debate and discussion, where we rationalize sinful behavior. We normalize it. It's only one drink. I mean, I'm not getting drunk, you know. The Bible, it doesn't really address this topic, whatever it is. It's one of those gray areas. You know, well, Jesus, I mean, he didn't really say anything about this. Well, you know, what the Apostle Paul really means there is, well, what Peter's really saying there, what Jesus is really saying, you know, if we just apply a little bit of common sense, it really means, or my favorite, you're taking that out of context. That's Old Testament. We're under grace now. Before long, what we have done, we have justified in our own minds that particular behavior. And the slow-moving train, which is the normalization of sin, finally pulls into the station where once sinful behavior is now acceptable. The voice of the moral relativist, which once cried out, "What is taboo for you is not taboo for me," is now silenced. Because every taboo has been normalized. We need to stop normalizing sin. Ravi Zacharias, Christian apologist, in his book, Deliver Us from Evil, sums up the situation when sin is finally normalized. Quote, "With the name of God now unhallowed and his kingdom not welcome, does it make sense to cry, 'Deliver us from evil'?" I'm telling you, until we fall face down before a holy and just God, we need to check to make sure we haven't normalized sin in our own life. I'm out of time. Much more could be said. Feel free to leave a comment. Always like to hear what you have to say, especially on a hot topic like this. Like Life from the Pulpit on Facebook. You can get all our updates and things like that when we go live with the program or I update the blog. Also, you can follow me on Twitter, @inpulpit, @NNicPulpit, P-U-L-P-I-T, on Twitter. Be sure to stop by the Life from the Pulpit blog, www.lifefromthepulpit.wordpress.com, all my commentary on the Gospel of Luke, Epistle of James, and now working through the First Epistle of John. All there, all available, all free for you to use and peruse in your everyday Bible study. Also, check out Merced Church of Christ website, mercedchurchofchrist.org, for sermon audio there. And as always, grace be with you all. Thanks for listening.